Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report, special Friday edition for June 5th, 2015. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. We'll have interviews with Intolerista Wingding musician Jeannie McHale about the June 13th event featuring satirical songwriter Roy Zimmerman and with Christ Church pastor Doug Wilson, who coined the term Intolerista. That's all coming up on the half-hour KRFP Evening Report. But first, this news. An early heat wave is expected throughout the Northwest this weekend, peaking with temperatures at or above 90 degrees on the Palouse Monday. Temperatures in central Washington could be as high as 105 degrees. Washington State University meteorologist Nick Lloyd told the Daily News temperatures will be 20 to 25 degrees higher than normal for this time of year. Nighttime temperatures will remain mild with lows in the mid-50s in the Moscow-Pullman area. The Sightline Institute says the Pacific Northwest will likely be the next major hub for the oil and gas industry. Sightline Institute Policy Director Eric DePlace told the Puget Sound Business Journal the Northwest is squarely in the crosshairs of the next stage of fossil fuel industry growth. DePlace said he expects the Northwest to become a major refining and transport hub for fossil fuels, in part because of much of the United States' surplus of unrefined crude oil is being sold to Asian markets. Federal law prevents the sale of unrefined oil to foreign customers, so refineries on the coast are expected to ramp up operations. Oil industry giants have proposed 10 new crude oil by rail projects in Washington. The projects include transport gateways and refineries. BP, Phillips 66, Shell, and U.S. Oil already operate refineries or oil terminals in the Northwest that are served by trains hauling crude oil, much of it from the North Dakota Bakken oil fields. The Sightline Institute says if all the proposed refineries and terminals are built, there will be a 37% increase in shipping traffic in the Salish Sea. The University of Idaho Faculty Federation reports full professor salaries at the University of Idaho are 26% below the national average for universities with doctoral programs. The Federation also reports salaries for associate professors are 17% behind the national average, and assistant professor salaries are 19% behind. The average salary for a full professor at the University of Idaho is $95,000, while the national average is $130,000. Associate professors at the UI average $73,200 per year, and assistant professors average $62,800 per year. Idaho Federation of Teachers President Nick Geyer told the Daily News, "The administration is way out ahead, but faculty lags behind. We still haven't made up our losses from the Great Recession." University of Idaho President Chuck Staben sent a statement to the paper, essentially agreeing with the Federation's assessment. Staben said, "Even given the extraordinary loyalty of our faculty and staff, low salaries put the university at risk of losing or failing to attract the talented teachers, researchers, and support staff who make UI a premier institution." University of Idaho salaries increased 3% this year, but Geyer indicated that's not enough to catch up with increases at other institutions. Geyer said part of the problem is the lack of collective bargaining by University of Idaho faculty. He said, "We are prohibited from bargaining by the legislature. A lot of peer institutions have collective bargaining. The K through 12 teachers in Idaho can bargain collectively. Why can't we as well?" The city of Moscow has released its annual water quality report and sent copies to city water customers. The report includes testing data for 2014. It said testing found no violations of Environmental Protection Agency standards for municipal drinking water among regulated contaminants. The water department adds chlorine to tap water to control microbes. The maximum level allowed is 4 parts per million, and the highest amount detected in the various samples taken monthly around the city last year was 1.7 parts per million. The average was 0.3 parts per million. A byproduct of chlorination is trihalomethanes, which were found at rates between 0.4 parts per million and 5.4 parts per million, depending on sample location. The maximum allowed by the EPA is 80 parts per million. The department also adds fluoride to drinking water, and the highest amount found at a test site was 1.6 parts per million, compared to 4 parts per million, which is the federal maximum. The lowest level detected was 0.3 parts per million. The amount of radioactive radium-226 and 228, which comes from natural deposits, was 0.41 picocuries per liter, compared to the maximum of 5 picocuries per liter allowed under federal law. The Water Department report also includes numbers for chromium, barium, copper, and lead. Whitman County Sheriff and Commander of the Quad Cities Drug Task Force, Brett Myers, said 5 people were arrested yesterday after a series of gunshots near 2 schools and a Clarkston Heights grocery store. Prosecutors charged 24-year-old Antonio J. Rubin and 25-year-old Ryan Anders with 4 counts each of first-degree felony assault today for allegedly shooting at police yesterday. They also charged 36-year-old Jason Lewis with 4 counts of being an accomplice to first-degree felony assault. A judge set bond at $500,000 for each of the 3. 28-year-old Tyrone Paul was charged with possession of a controlled substance and is held on a $25,000 bond. According to the Lewiston Tribune, Myers said during a surveillance operation at a Clarkston Heights house, somebody called in a report of drug activity. Suspects allegedly fired shots at Asotin Police Chief Bill Derbon's car. No one was injured, but a bullet struck Heights Family Foods. The incident ended when a car was rammed by a car driven by an undercover officer near the 5th Avenue and Appleside Boulevard intersection. Myers said quick action by the undercover officer ended a situation that could have turned deadly. Nearby Lincoln Middle School and Heights Elementary School were put under lockdown when the events occurred. Myers said he had to make a judgment call and he put himself in harm's way to stop the car. The nice part about today is no one was hurt, partially because of really good police work and partially because we were really lucky. The Federal Transit Administration has allocated funding to the Moscow Smart Transit System, which will allow it to continue to operate through July. The funding came because of an extension from Congress under the Moving Ahead for Progress in the 21st Century, or MAP 21 Act, which had been scheduled to expire last week. American Public Transportation Association spokesperson Mantel Williams predicted last month Congress would have to come up with the extended benefits for the MAP 21 program if transit service were to continue around the nation. Mantel said his organization represents over 1,500 transit providers across the country. The Federal Transit Administration is responsible for over half of the local transit system's $680,000 annual budget. The remainder comes from local sources. SMART Executive Director Jenny Ford said if the funding was not approved, the system would have had to end fixed route services and revert to the previous method of a demand response system. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service reports grizzly bear populations are growing and are rising out of what the agency calls negative territory for the first time in decades. Recovery coordinator Wayne Casworm said the effort to bolster grizzly bear numbers, which started in 1990, is finally paying off. Casworm said at issue now is human-caused fatalities, which continue to plague grizzlies. Casworm told the Flathead Beacon. Many of the bears are killed mistakenly by hunters looking for black bears to shoot. Casworm also said, historically, we have had a lot of human-caused mortality that pushed the population into decline. In recent years, though, things have turned around, and trend monitoring now indicates that we are growing. The Whatcom County Health Department is reporting a strain of E. coli bacteria caused a new outbreak of disease at a dairy farm in Linden. According to health department officials, the newest outbreak is the same strain which sickened 25 people at the Milkmakers Festival held at the same farm in April. Most of those sickened in the original outbreak were children. The department said in its report Wednesday it has determined E. coli strain 0157:H7 is present at the farm in northwestern Washington. During the original outbreak, 10 people were hospitalized and 6 developed a type of kidney failure. There were no deaths. According to the Associated Press, 9 of the infected people had contact with people who were not at the fairground event but came into contact with someone who was. Whatcom County Environmental Health Supervisor Tom Kunesh said, "The bottom line here is we can't expect an environment like a barn to ever be completely free of pathogenic bacteria." Kunesh also said the investigation did not turn up anything unusual in how the event was run. The most recent bacterial outbreak was found in a pile of manure, a hay maze, and in 2 sets of bleachers. The report also said the area was likely contaminated before the event. Preliminary findings from the health department interviews indicate those who washed their hands or sanitized themselves in some manner were less likely to be sickened. The report also said the risk of contamination increased when people ate lunch in the barn. Event spokesperson Kim Vlas with the Whatcom County Dairy Women said she was worried about the effect of the contamination. Vlas said, "We're grateful that the source appears to have been identified. Our group is really focused on the families here still. We don't want to lose sight of that." A court of appeals has upheld a lower court ruling that vacates a $1 million award for a group of Pullman firefighters. A 3-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled the Pullman fire chief did not retaliate against the firefighters following a sexual harassment complaint made by Pullman firefighter Eric Reber in 2009. Pullman fire chief Pat Wilkins temporarily demoted Reber following the complaint, and the department also disciplined 6 other firefighters who supported Reber. The 7 firefighters filed a $2.5 million lawsuit against the city of Pullman. The firefighters were awarded more than $1 million in damages following a trial in 2013, but U.S. District Judge Thomas Rice rescinded the award this week. Thomas ruled Pullman Fire Chief Wilkins did not retaliate against Reber as a result of the complaint. Patricia Urquhart, an attorney representing the firefighters, told the Lewiston Tribune she will file a motion asking the full Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals to reconsider its decision based on facts that were overlooked. Urquhart said, "We're going to fight this, and injustice was done, and we're going to set it right." Victims of rape and sexual assault may have twice as much time to press charges under a bill approved this week in the Oregon legislature. The bill would increase the time victims can file charges from 6 years to 12 years. Some sexual assault victims have pushed to have the deadline increased to 20 years, and others have advocated removing the state statute of limitations regarding sexual assault reporting altogether. As the bill was developed, several sexual assault victims testified their cases were never tried in court because the 6-year time limit to report had passed before they were ready to come forward. One person who testified was Danielle Tudor, who was sexually assaulted in 1979 by Richard Troy Gilmore, the so-called jogger rapist. Gilmore later admitted raping 9 women. The Associated Press reports only 1 charge was brought against Gilmore because the statute of limitations was in effect, which was 3 years at the time. The statute of limitations had passed in 8 of the 9 cases. Investigators are trying to find those responsible for placing a pile of rocks on railroad tracks near Rathdrum last month. Amtrak's Empire Builder locomotive sustained about $5,000 in cosmetic damage when it plowed into the 4-foot pile of rocks May 24th. No injuries were reported. The train was delayed for nearly a half hour while crews cleared the track. Law enforcement are continuing to investigate and are checking beer cans found near the incident for fingerprints. A major Tri-Cities area apple producer will pay a $2.25 million penalty for hiring illegal immigrants. The Federal Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency determined Brochi Orchards of Prescott hired nearly 950 employees over the years that the agency suspects were non-citizens who did not have legal work authorizations. According to the settlement, the company did not admit to any criminal wrongdoing, but it did admit that it continued to employ workers who were unauthorized to work in the U.S. Company officials told the Associated Press they are glad to have the incident behind them, but urged Congress to pass immigration reform to help alleviate a shortage of agricultural workers. Washington Governor Jay Inslee has announced a plan to create a group that will look at possible personnel cuts at Lewis McChord Military Base. Inslee's office said the number of active duty Army personnel is expected to be reduced from 570,000 to fewer than 440,000 nationally, and that could affect up to 11,000 active duty soldiers and civilian Department of Defense employees at the sprawling Western Washington facility. The Associated Press reported the group will begin preparing a plan to help workforce training and reemployment for the workers who will be affected by the cuts. The Federal Interagency Fire Center says fire danger should be above normal in Washington this summer. The Fire Center report said they expect increased fire activity this summer due to dry conditions in the state. Washington Governor Jay Inslee declared a statewide drought emergency May 15th, and state fire officials say they expect the fire season to begin early this year and for fires to burn in higher elevations than usual. Last year, nearly 900 wildfires burned more than 500 square miles in Washington. Prosecutors charged a 24-year-old Pullman man with one count of second-degree murder yesterday in connection with the death of his father. Police arrested Eric Luden Saturday after they responded to his apartment on College Hill and found his father, Virgil C. Luden, dead. According to the Daily News, police and emergency crews went to the apartment after Luden called 911 to report his father had attacked him with a knife and that he had struck his father with a cooking pot. Medical personnel tried to revive the elder Luden, but he was declared dead at the scene. Eric Luden was treated for a broken hand and cuts on his forearm, but investigators believe the cuts were self-inflicted. Luden was scheduled to enter a plea in the case this morning. A conviction on a second-degree murder charge could result in a maximum sentence of life in prison and a $50,000 fine. The city of Mousko is launching the Property Owner Assistance Program to help residents maintain safe sidewalks next to their properties. City engineering staff will visit businesses and homeowners on request to evaluate sidewalks and offer cost estimates for repairing or replacing sidewalks. Those who want more information about the program or to schedule an evaluation can contact the Mousko Engineering Department at 208-883-7034. That number again, 208-883-7034. We now turn to our featured segment. The 7th annual Intolerista Wing Ding is scheduled for Saturday, June 13th at 6 p.m. at the 1912 Center in Moscow. The event is free to the public. KRFP correspondent Marie McHugh spoke to Jeannie McHale, one of the artists performing music at the Intolerista Wingding event. McHale will be opening for satirical songwriter Roy Zimmerman of Marin County, California, who has taken part in every Intolerista Wingding since they started in 2008. McHale has also been performing her original music at the annual Wingding for several years in a row. McHale, or McHugh also interviewed Pastor Doug Wilson of the Moscow-based Christ Church about the history of the community event as he sees it. Pastor Wilson coined the term intolerista, using it to describe a group of Moscow citizens who in 2003 were critical of Christ Church activities and Wilson's role as co-author of the book Southern Slavery as It Was with League of the South leader Steve Wilkins. We'll hear that interview later in the broadcast. In an interview yesterday, Jeannie McHale discussed how she became involved as an entertainer at the annual Wingding, how the event got its name, and how her music is a meaningful and fun way to express her concerns about social justice and environmental issues.
Jeannie McHale, welcome to KRFP. So glad you could join me today.
Thank you, Mary. I'm glad to be here.
So this is the seventh year for the annual Intolerista Wingding. Tell us about how this event got started.
Well, it was the idea of Tom Hansen and other people that he works with that call themselves Intoleristas, and I wasn't really too aware of what the group was working on until 2008 when they decided to hold this Wingding, and they invited Roy Zimmerman to come play. And they contacted my husband, Fritz Knorr, who, as you know, is the sort of a leader to the extent that there is a leader of the Moscow Volunteer Peace Band. Mm-hmm. And Tom wanted to know if Fritz would have the peace band play at the Wingding. And Fritz said, no, we're sort of an outdoor marching band, and maybe you want to look at my wife's music videos. And he sent Roy Zimmerman the link to the Sarah Palin song that I recorded in 2008. Roy Zimmerman and his wife and co-conspirator Melanie Harvey were, I guess they liked the Sarah Palin song and they approved of having me open, and I had never heard of Roy before that, and I didn't really know much about the Intoleristas, but a gig is a gig, and so after I found out what they were working on and what they stood for, I was totally on board. And then after I looked at some of Roy's videos online, I was totally enamored of what he's doing with music and musical activism. And I wanted to be a part of it, even though it was kind of scary because I thought, wow, am I, you know, on the level? Am I at that level where I could contribute to a gig of this nature? I'm so glad that I did because I've been having fun with it now. Mm-hmm. This will be the seventh year in a row.
What are the Intoleristas celebrating at the Wingding?
In general, progressive values and having a good time with music. And as you have seen from the list of what the Intoleristas stand for, they stand for values like feminism and diversity, anti-slavery sentiments, and so forth. So these are people who all look at the world the same way and want to express that through music and just get together and have a good time. Well, the Intolerista Wingding is about celebrating progressive values, and we could be accused in our songs, both Roy and I could be accused of preaching to the choir. And Roy's response to that is that it's not preaching to the choir, it's entertaining the troops. And it is a difficult struggle, trying to save the planet, trying to fight for human rights for everybody, and just the struggles that go with wanting peace in the world and peace in our own town. Those are tough issues, and they're not really funny. But if we don't have humor and we don't have music, we're not going to have the will to fight for social justice or to fight for environmental activism. And so for me, the goal is to have a good time while you're working on those good causes.
That name, Intolerista, I'm wondering about that name. How did you get to be called the Intoleristas?
What I've learned from Tom Hansen is that in around 2003, there were a group of people that were challenging the local pastor, Doug Wilson, and his pro-slavery views, and he referred to them as MOLs, Moscow Organization of Liberal Elitists, I think it was. And then later, he dubbed these people with the name Intoleristas because he was alleging that by being anti-slavery, they were intolerant of these religious viewpoints being expressed by the pastor, Doug Wilson. And so the people who felt this way kept the name Intoleristas. They just adopted it. And so my joke is that the Intoleristas are people who are intolerant of intolerance. So we don't think that religion can be used as a guise for hatred or discrimination. And you can't justify slavery or hatred or lack of inclusiveness by any religious principle. And so I think that's what the people who adopt this name believe in. There's no organization. It's not like anybody pays dues or belongs to a club to be called an Intolerista. It's like the Moscow Volunteer Peace Band. You just show up and you have this sentiment. And so if you come to the Wing Ding on Saturday, June 13th at 6 p.m., which is free, and join us in our musical mayhem, then you are an Intolerista as well.
Jeannie, so much of your music that we hear in the community is about social activism. Has your music always been about social activism?
Pretty much. I guess the first song that I wrote as an adult was about 35 years ago when my husband and I first moved to Moscow. And in the 1980s, there was a big push to widen A Street, West A Street, and we had a home there at that time. And there were a lot of people attending hearings and going to city council to protest their plans to destroy our neighborhood. And so I wrote a song at that time called A Street Sleazy. And the next song that I remember writing was about the Iran-Contra arms scandal, and that was called Geezergate Bashamuck Scam. And so I've had this tendency to write songs with really short shelf lives, and sometimes the songs kind of write themselves because they take topics from the news that just, I guess for me, it's a way to process things that I want to react to. And you know how it is when you're listening to the news, it can be very frustrating sometimes and you feel powerless. And so music is a way to sort of rally people around the cause, or at least entertain them or look on the bright side of things in the face of some really pressing and depressing political situations.
Is there any particular theme for this year's Wing Ding?
Well, there's no one particular theme. And I don't know what treats Roy Zimmerman has in store for us, but I'm sure they're going to be fabulous. My own songs are going to cover a range of topics, from environmental issues related to our over-reliance on oil. That's one of my favorite topics. And also human rights. You know, 9 years, we're still trying to get human rights for gender identity and sexual orientation in the state of Idaho. So we have to keep pushing for that, and music is just one tool that we have in our efforts to get social justice for everybody.
Well, this sounds like it's going to be a wonderful, very entertaining event with some really great people. The event will be June 13th at the 1912 Center in Moscow on 3rd Street, and it's open to the public. The event is free and goes from 6 to 10 p.m. Local musician Jeannie McHale and Roy Zimmerman.
That was KRFP citizen journalist Marie McHugh speaking with musical performer Jeannie McHale, who will be opening for Roy Zimmerman at the Intolerista Wing Ding at the 1912 Center in Moscow, Saturday, June 13th at 6 p.m. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. In the next interview, McHugh interviews Pastor Doug Wilson of Christ Church in Moscow about how he came to name a group of Moscow citizens Intoleristas. Wilson responds to the 2013 Moscow City Ordinance against discrimination based on gender and sexual identity, and why his religion is against homosexuality.
Mr. Wilson, thank you so much for your time for this interview with KRFP.
Happy to do it.
You've been credited with giving the name Intoleristas to a group of Moscow citizens back in 2005, and that was 10 years ago.
Okay.
And 10 years later, they are still having an annual Intolerista Wing Ding celebration.
I've seen this banner. Yes.
You've seen the banner. So tell me why you felt that a large group of citizens who were responding to a publication back in 2003 about slavery, that you had published and had spoken about in our community. Mm-hmm. Why did you feel that these people who were responding to you were intolerant?
The reason is that that's not what they were responding to. So I wrote the booklet, co-wrote the booklet in the mid-90s. So it was an old booklet, old news. It was not a thing. And what happened was some of our students, some of the students here, had begun to reach out to some members of the Gay Straight Alliance up at the U of I and had gone to some of the meetings to make friends with people and to talk. They weren't picketing or protesting or nothing like that. It was, mm-hmm. they were reaching out. And
this was around 2003?
Well, the ruckus, the big ruckus was 2002, 2003.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So this happened. So they were doing this, and the Gay Straight Alliance was divided. Some of them were happy to get to know some conservative Christians and talk and everything, and the other half were mad, just mad about it. And so the folks who were mad about it, we had a history. At that time, we had an annual history conference, and we had a history conference coming up that was on the Revolutionary era. You know, the Age of Revolutions, French Revolution, all of that. And one morning, all of Moscow was papered with posters about our upcoming history conference on slavery. Well, it wasn't on slavery at all. It had nothing to do with slavery. And what they did is they'd gone back to this booklet that I'd co-written with Steve Wilkins, took some quotes out of context, put them on the poster, and then wallpapered downtown with the poster about our conference on slavery. Well, and then that's what started the food fight. That was the ruckus, and it was the result of some of our people reaching out and trying to make friends.
Mm-hmm.
So that's in this, let me get to the name Intolerista. What I did is I said there are people in our town whose absolute value is tolerance, and they need to start showing some. They are tolerant of everything that thinks like they do. They don't know how to tolerate anything to the right of them that disagrees.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so I labeled, I called them intoleristas somewhere in that ruckus, and the name stuck.
It certainly has.
Yes.
In a tongue-in-cheek sort of way.
Right. I understand they're using it very, very differently than I do. Right.
Uh-huh.
But it's the same word.
Why do you think they would be intolerant of you as a religious leader?
Because of what they think, what they're afraid I would do, or what they're afraid I'm up to.
What are they afraid of?
They're afraid that we're Reformed Calvinist Ayatollahs that are trying to take over the town and make all the women wear veils, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they're afraid of things that I don't believe, don't want to do, don't want to practice. But we are conservative Christians, that's true. And there's a lot of us. And so what happened was Moscow was a blue dot in a very red state.
Indeed it is.
That makes sense. It is.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, and as a university community, it sort of took a quiet pride in being Berkeley of the North, or you know, some sort of a blue dot of sanity in this red state insanity. And what happened was, as our churches here started to grow and have grown significantly, and we're now a significant part of the whole population, I believe that the progressives, the liberals, and the intoleristas, being the radical wing of liberals and progressives, I believe that they felt their identity as a quiet liberal town threatened, and mm-hmm. and so they reacted to this presence among them, and unfortunately they reacted. If we were Muslims, they would have been a whole lot nicer to us. If we were Jews, they'd be a whole lot nicer to us. If we were Amish, they'd love us and buy our quilts, but we're conservative, evangelical, Reformed Christians, so they despise us.
So I refer to it as a conflict. And you refer to it as a ruckus. Mm-hmm. And it certainly has become a significant part of our recent Moscow community history.
Correct.
It has established itself as history at this point.
Yeah.
And it certainly has caused some serious factioning among members of our community.
That's true, too.
And how has that factioning affected members of your congregation?
Well, most of our folks are used to it. Some of our people are kind of oblivious, and you know, they're not aware of it until they run into it. You know, the recent thing with the co-op would be an example, where a number of our members of our church are members of the co-op, and a couple of them got elected to the co-op board just as part of the normal process. It's a small town, and people are involved, and I would run into people from our church at Les Schwab, and it's no surprise that they're over the co-op, too. And so there was just within the last month, a controversy at the co-op, and at least one of our members who was elected to the board was just totally surprised at what? You know, they were out of that loop until they ran into the buzzsaw.
You are listening to an interview with Christ Church Pastor Doug Wilson, recorded at his office in Moscow this morning. Wilson spoke with KRFP citizen journalist Mary McHugh.
In 2013, the city of Moscow adopted an anti-discrimination ordinance, making it illegal to discriminate against people based on gender identity and sexual orientation. So would you include the city leaders as intoleristas?
I would say that sometimes politicians pass laws without having a clue what they're doing. They're just responding to pressure, right? Mm-hmm. So I would distinguish between people who want that law, who argue for it, who insist on it, and politicians who go along, right? But I would say that law is very much an intolerista law.
And what are they intolerant of? If it becomes inclusive and prevents people who might be outside of the bell curve from being discriminated against.
Right. I would say everything hinges on, it's one of these inescapable concepts. It's not whether you discriminate, it's who you discriminate against. So we either discriminate against, let's say, the sexual outliers, the people outside the bell curve, as you describe them, or we discriminate against evangelical florists. Right. So if let's say I'm a Christian, conservative Christian, and I own a hardware store, and a gay man comes in and wants to buy a hammer, I'll sell him a hammer. I'll sell him two hammers. I have no problem doing business in a community with practicing homosexuals, open homosexuals. I have no problem selling him a hammer.
But what if he were to come into your want to join your congregation?
A congregation is a voluntary association of people who submit to a particular doctrinal understanding of the world, right? So I can't, it would be like me going to join the chess club at the U of I and bringing my backgammon board. I'm sorry, the chess club exists to promote the playing of chess. Mm-hmm. I don't get to take it over and make everybody play backgammon or make them mm-hmm. call my backgammon playing chess. All right, so as a church is a voluntary association. Well, let's take it into the public square. Let's say I'm a photographer, a videographer, or a florist, or a baker, like the Christian Bakery in Oregon or Baronel Stutzman in Washington. When someone comes to a baker or comes to a florist, they're saying, we are having this event that your religion describes as sinful. And we want you to take your expertise in glorifying, beautifying, praising something, and we want you to come, and we want to force you by force of law to come and praise something that you don't want to praise, that you don't agree with.
Mm-hmm.
All right? It would be like a KKK grand wizard coming into a black baker's bakery, saying, hey, we're having our 150th anniversary.
Would you cater it?
Would you cater it?
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
And I'd say, well, come on, for crying out loud.
Mm-hmm.
Let the baker say no thanks. Mm-hmm. Right? And if you say, no, it's a, the baker put his shingle out and he's promising the public what these people are doing is not illegal. The KKK reception is, there's no illegal activity. What you're doing is you're imposing, we're either going to discriminate against the KKK guy or we're going to discriminate against the black baker. Mm-hmm. But we're going to discriminate against somebody. Now, what I'm saying is that the recent statute that Moscow passed has come down firmly saying we are going to discriminate against conservative Christians. Sorry. We don't care what you think. We don't care what your religion says.
I don't think the ordinance stated that.
Well, it basically, could a florist or a photographer get in trouble with the ordinance by declining to cater an event or photograph an event because it was a same-sex event? The answer is yes. Right? The answer is yes. And so consequently, we are being discriminated against. But that's not the objection. Somebody is always going to be discriminated against. What I want to do is maximize the amount of liberty and minimize the amount of giving offense to one another. So I want the black baker to have every liberty to decline to do the KKK event. I want our florists to have the right to decline to do a gay event, and I want the gay florist to have the right to decline to do our church dinner. Right?
Are you able to speak about what specifically about homosexuality you are against?
Oh, okay. Basically, I'm a Christian who believes the Bible. And I believe the Bible teaches that homosexual behavior is not God's pattern, not God's design. Because in the first chapter of Genesis, God created male and female. And it says he created them in the image of God. In the image of God created he them. Male and female created he them. So
As stated in the Bible.
As stated in the Bible. So I believe that mankind together, male and female together, is what bears and carries the image of God. And so consequently, to rearrange it, I think, is to say, well, why not two women or two men or a man and three women? I believe you're blurring the message that God has embedded into the world of his own image. God.
So based on the information and interpretation of the Bible as you see it.
Correct.
That is your premise.
That's okay. My premise. And I believe in a country with religious liberty, I ought to be allowed to believe that. I ought to be allowed to say that. And I ought to be allowed to live my life in accordance with it. And I would be willing to grant that same right to someone else.
That was KRFP correspondent Marie McHugh interviewing Christchurch pastor Doug Wilson at his office today in Moscow. Earlier in the broadcast, you heard from Jeannie McHale, one of the artists performing music at the Intolerista Wingding event June 13th at the 1912 Center. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service, it'll be mostly clear through Tuesday. Low tonight, 51. High, 83 tomorrow, 87 Sunday, 90 on Monday, and 86 on Tuesday. Lows in the mid-50s throughout the weekend. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events, and the music and arts programming you hear every day here on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho,